I can't find them, can I? He asked. That's right. Like I said, this is a PDC resolution. Then I'll go with them to Doomsday. You may. Luo Ji had imagined he would be turned down, but just as when he had given up his Wallfacer status, there was practically no space between his statement and Sei's reply. He knew that things weren't as easy as that. He asked, Is there a problem? No, this time it really is fine. You know, since the birth of the Wallfacer Project, there has always been dissent within the international community. Out of their own interests, most countries have supported some of the Wallfacers while opposing others, so there was always going to be a side that wants to be rid of you. Now that the first Wallbreaker is out and Tyler has failed, forces opposed to the project have grown more powerful and have driven its supporters to a stalemate. If at this point you proposed going directly to Doomsday, it would be a compromise plan acceptable to both sides. But, Dr. Luo, are you truly willing to do that while humanity is fighting for survival? You politicians sound off about humanity at the drop of a hat, but I can't see humanity. I can only see individuals. I'm just one individual, an ordinary person, and I can't take on the responsibility of saving all of humanity. I just want to live my own life. Very well. But Zhuang Yan and Xia Xia are two of those individuals. Don't you want to fulfill your responsibility to them? Even if she hurt you, I can see you still love her. And there's the child, too. From the moment Hubble 2 finally confirmed the Trisolaran invasion, one thing has been certain. Humanity will fight to the end. When your beloved and your child awaken in 4 centuries, Doomsday and the flames of war will be upon them. But by that time, you'll have lost your Wallfacer status and will be powerless to protect them. They will only be able to share a hellish existence with you while you await the final annihilation of the world. Is that what you want? Is that the life you want to give your wife and child? Luo Ji said nothing. If you won't think of anything else, then just imagine that Doomsday battle 4 centuries from now, and the look in their eyes when they see you. What sort of person will they see? A man who abandoned the woman he loves most, together with all of humanity? A man unwilling to save all of the world's children? A man who wouldn't even save his own child? Are you, as a man, capable of withstanding their gaze? Luo Ji bent his head in silence. The sound of the nighttime rain falling on grass and lake was like myriad entreaties from another time and space. Do you really believe that I can change all of that? Luo Ji asked, raising his head. Why not try? Of all the Wallfacers, you may have the greatest hope of success. I've come today to tell you that. Go on, then. Why? Because out of all humanity, you are the only person that Trisolaris wants dead. Leaning against the pillar, Luo Ji stared at Sei, but saw nothing. He struggled to remember. Sei went on, That car crash was meant for you. It just accidentally hit your girlfriend. But that really was an accident. That car changed direction because the 2 other cars collided. They had been planning that for a long time. But I was just an ordinary person back then, with no special protection. It would have been simple to kill me. Why go to such lengths? To make the murder look like an accident, so as not to attract any attention. They almost succeeded. There were 51 traffic accidents that killed 5 people in the city that day, but a scout hidden within the ETO provided an intelligence report confirming that the ETO had orchestrated the attempt on your life. And what's most frightening is this. The order came from Trisolaris itself, conveyed to Evans through the Sophons. To this date, that is the only assassination they've ever ordered. Me? Trisolaris wants to kill me? For what reason? Again, Luo Ji felt displaced from himself. I don't know. No one knows now. Evans may have known, but he's dead. He was evidently the one who added the requirement to the assassination order that it not attract attention. That only reinforces your importance. Importance? Luo Ji shook his head with a wry smile. Look at me. Do I really look like someone with superpowers? You don't have superpowers, so don't let your thoughts go in that direction. It'll only lead you astray, Say said, gesturing emphatically. You had no special powers in your prior research, be they supernatural abilities or extraordinary technical skills within the known laws of nature, or at least none that we have been able to discover. That Evans required that the assassination not attract attention demonstrates this point as well, because it proves that your ability can be acquired by others. Why didn't you tell me? We were afraid of influencing whatever it is you have. Too many unknowns. We felt it best to let things ride. I'd once had a notion to work on cosmic sociology, because... Then a small voice deep within him said, You're a wall-facer! This was the first time he had heard that voice. He also heard another non-existent sound, the buzzing of sophons as they flew about him. He even thought he saw a few blurry, firefly-like points of light. So, for the first time, he acted like a wall-facer and swallowed his words, saying only, Is that relevant? Say shook her head. Probably not. As far as we are aware, that's just the topic of a research application that never actually went forward, much less obtained any results. Besides, even if you had done the research, we wouldn't expect you to come up with results any more valuable than any other researcher. And why is that? Dr. Luo, we're speaking frankly here. As I understand it, you're a failure of a scholar. You perform research not out of any thirst for exploration, nor out of a sense of duty and mission, but simply as a way to make a living. Isn't that the way things are these days? There's nothing wrong with that, of course, but you exhibit all kinds of behaviours unbecoming a serious and dedicated scholar. Your research is utilitarian, your techniques opportunistic. You seek out sensationalism, and you have a history of embezzling funding. Character-wise, you're cynical and irresponsible, and you harbour a mocking attitude toward a scholar's vocation. We're actually well aware of the fact that you don't care about the fate of the human race. And that's why you would stoop to such despicable means to coerce me. You've despised me all along, haven't you? Under normal circumstances, a man like you would never be tasked with such an important duty. But there is this one overriding detail. Trisolaris is afraid of you. Be your own wall-breaker. Find out why. When Say finished, she stepped off the porch, got into the waiting car, and disappeared into the rainy mist. Standing there, Luo Ji lost his sense of time. Gradually, the rain stopped and the wind picked up, blowing the night sky free of clouds, revealing the snow peaks and letting the bright round moon bathe the world in silvery light. Before going back inside, Luo Ji took one last look at the silver Garden of Eden, and his heart said to Zhuang Yan and Xia Xia, My love, wait for me at doomsday. Standing in the giant shadow cast by the space plane High Frontier, and looking up at its massive body, Zhang Beihai was involuntarily reminded of the carrier Tang, now long dismantled, and even wondered if the hull of High Frontier could contain a few steel plates from Tang. Over the course of more than 30 re-entries, the burning heat had left scorch marks on the body of the spaceplane, and it really did look like the way Tang had when it was under construction. The body had the same sense of age, but the two cylindrical booster rockets beneath the wings were new, making it resemble repairs to ancient architecture in Europe. The newness of the patches stood in stark contrast to the colouring of the original building, reminding visitors that those parts were modern additions. But if the boosters were removed, High Frontier would look like a big old transport plane. The space plane was a very new thing, one of the few breakthroughs in aerospace technology over the last 5 years, and quite possibly the last generation of chemically propelled spacecraft. The concept had been proposed the previous century as a replacement for the space shuttle that could take off from a runway like an ordinary plane and fly conventionally to the top layer of the atmosphere, at which point the rockets would be turned on for spaceflight and it would enter orbit. High Frontier was the fourth such spaceplane in operation, and many more were under construction. They would, in the near future, take on the task of building the space elevator. "I once imagined that we would never get the chance to go into space in our lifetime," Zhang Beihai said to Cheng Wei Se, who had come to see him off. He and 20 other Space Force officers, all of them members of the three strategic institutes, would take High Frontier to the ISS. "Are there naval officers who've never been to sea?" Cheng Wei Se said, smiling. "Of course there are, lots of them. Some people in the Navy sort exactly that, but I'm not that sort of person." "Beihai, be aware of one thing. The active duty astronauts are still Air Force personnel, so you are the first representatives of the Space Force to go into space." "It's a shame there's no specific mission." "Experience is the mission. A space strategist ought to have a consciousness of space. This wasn't feasible before the space plane, since sending up one person cost tens of millions, but it's much cheaper now. We'll try to put more strategists into space soon, since we're the Space Force after all. Right now we're more like a college of bullshit, and that just won't do." Then the boarding call was issued, and the officers began climbing the air stair to the plane. They wore uniforms but not spacesuits, and looked no different than if they were taking standard air travel. It was a sign of progress, demonstrating that going to space was a little more normal than it had been. From the uniforms, Zhang Beihai noticed that there were people from other departments boarding the plane as well. "Ah, Beihai, there's another important thing," Cheng Wei Se said as Beihai was about to pick up his carry-on. "The CMC has studied the report we submitted on sending political cadres to the future as reinforcements, and the brass feel that conditions are still premature." Zhang Beihai squinted as if warding against a glare, though they were still in the space plane's shadow. "Commander, my feeling is that we ought to keep the entire four-century period in mind when making plans, and to be clear about what's urgent and what's important. But please be assured that I won't say that in any formal setting. I know very well that our superiors are considering the bigger picture." "The higher-ups have affirmed your long-term thinking and commend you for it. The document stresses one point. The plan to send reinforcements to the future has not been denied. Research and planning will continue, but present conditions are still premature for execution. I feel, and this is of course my personal opinion, that we need additional qualified political cadres in our ranks to lessen the current work pressures before we can consider it." "Commander, Surely you are aware of what qualified means in the context of the Space Force Political Department and what the basic requirements are. Qualified people are becoming increasingly rare. But we've got to look forward. If there are breakthroughs in the two key technologies of Phase 1, the space elevator and controlled fusion, and there's hope of this in our lifetimes, then things will be better. Okay then, off with you. Zheng Beihai saluted him and then stepped onto the stairs. His first feeling upon entering the cabin was that it wasn't much different than a civilian airliner, except the seats were wider, having been designed to accommodate spacesuits. During the first flights of the space plane, all passengers had to wear spacesuits as a precaution, but there was no need for that now. He had a window seat, and the seat immediately next to his was also occupied. A civilian, judging from his clothing. Zheng Beihai nodded to him in greeting before turning his attention to fastening the seat's complicated safety belt. There was no countdown. High Frontier started its air engines and began taxiing. Because of its weight, it spent longer on the ground during takeoff than an ordinary plane, but at last it lifted ponderously off the ground and embarked on its voyage into space. "This is the 38th flight of the space plane High Frontier. The aviation phase has started and will last approximately 30 minutes. Please do not unfasten your safety belts," said a voice over the intercom. As he watched the ground recede through the cabin window, Zheng Beihai's thoughts turned to the past. During training to become a carrier captain, he had completed naval aviation pilot training and had passed the Level 3 fighter pilot exam. On his first solo trip, he had watched Earth recede like this and suddenly discovered that he loved the sky even more deeply than the ocean. Now his longing was for the space beyond the sky. He was a man destined to fly high and fly far. "Not much different from civil aviation, you think?" He turned to see the speaker sitting in the next seat and recognized him at last. "You must be Dr. Ding Yi. I've been wanting to meet you." "But it's going to get rough in just a little bit," the man said, ignoring Zheng Beihai's salutation. He went on, "The first time I didn't take off my glasses after the aviation phase, and they crushed my nose with the weight of a brick. The second time I took them off, but then they flew off after gravity went away. It wasn't easy for the guy to find them for me in the air filter in the plane's tail." "I thought you went up on the space shuttle the first time. On TV, that didn't look like a very nice trip," Zheng Beihai said with a grin. "Oh, I'm talking about taking the space plane. If we count the shuttle, then this is my fourth time. On the shuttle, they took away my glasses before takeoff." "Why are you going to the station this time? You've just been put in charge of a controlled fusion project, the third branch, isn't it?" Four branches had been set up for the controlled fusion project, each pursuing a different direction of research. Restrained by the safety belt, Ding Yi lifted a hand to point at Zheng Beihai. "You study controlled fusion and you can't go into space? You sound the same as those guys. The ultimate goal of our research is spaceship engines, and the real power held by the aerospace industry today remains to a large degree in the hands of the people who used to make chemical rocket engines. They're saying now that we're just supposed to devote ourselves to controlled fusion on the ground, and that we basically have no say in the general plan of the space fleet." "Dr. Ding, your views are identical to mine." Zheng Beihai loosened his safety belt and leaned over. "For a space fleet, space travel is an entirely different concept from chemical rocketry. Even the space elevator is different from today's aerospace techniques. But right now, the aerospace industry of the past still holds too much power. Its people are ideologically ossified and legalistic, and if things continue, there will be all kinds of trouble.
There's nothing to be done. At least they managed to come up with this in the course of 5 years, he pointed around him, and this gives them the capital to squeeze out outsiders.
The cabin intercom started up.
Please take care. We are approaching an altitude of 20,000 meters. Due to the thin atmosphere we will now be flying through, there may be sharp drops in altitude that will produce momentary weightlessness. Please do not panic. Again, please keep your safety belts fastened.
Ding Yi said,
But our trip to the station this time is unrelated to the controlled fusion project. It's to recover those cosmic ray catchers. That's some expensive stuff.
The space-based high-energy physics research project has been stopped? Asked Zheng Beihai, retightening his safety belt.
It's stopped. Knowing that there's no need to waste effort in the future counts as a kind of success.
The Sofons won.
That's right. So humanity only has a few reserves of theory remaining. Classical physics, quantum mechanics, and a still embryonic string theory. How far their applications can be pushed is up to fate.
High Frontier continued to climb, its aviation engines rumbling under the strain as if it were struggling up a tall mountain. But there were no sudden drops. The space plane was now approaching 30,000 meters. The limit of aviation. Looking out, Zheng Beihai saw that the blue of the sky was fading as it got dark, even though the sun became even more dazzling.
Our current flight altitude is 31,000 meters. The aviation phase is complete, and the space flight phase is about to begin. Please adjust your seat according to the illustration on screen to minimize the discomfort of hypergravitation.
Then Zheng Beihai felt the plane rise gently, as if it had discarded a burden.
Aircraft engine assembly separated, aerospace engine ignition countdown, 10, 9, 8.
For them, this is the real launch.
Enjoy,
Ding Yi said and closed his eyes.
When the countdown reached 0, there was a huge roar, as if the entire sky outside was shouting, and then hypergravity came like a giant, slowly tightening fist.
With effort, Zheng Beihai twisted his head to look out the window. He was unable to see the flames spurting from the engine, but a wide swathe of the rarefied air of the sky outside was painted red, as if High Frontier was floating through a sunset. 5 minutes later, the boosters detached, and after another 5 minutes of acceleration, the main engine cut off. High Frontier had entered orbit. The giant hand of hypergravity suddenly let go, and Zheng Beihai's body bounced back from the depths of his seat. Although the restraint of his safety belt kept him from floating away, to his senses he and the High Frontier were no longer parts of the same whole. The gravity that had once bonded them together was gone, and he and the plane were now flying in parallel paths through space. Out the window were the brightest stars he had ever seen in his life. Later, when the space plane adjusted its attitude, the sun streamed in through the windows and myriad points of light danced in its beams, dust particles that had weightlessly taken to the air. As the plane gradually rotated, he saw the Earth. From this low orbital position, he couldn't see the entire sphere, only the arc of the horizon. But he could clearly make out the shapes of the continents. Then the starfield, that long-awaited sight, finally came into view, and he said in his heart, Dad, I've taken the first step. For 5 years, General Fitzroy had felt like a wallfacer in the actual sense of the word,
in that the wall he faced was the big screen with the image of the stars between Earth and Trisolaris. At first glance, it was entirely black, but closer inspection of the screen revealed points of starlight. He had grown so well acquainted with those stars that when he had attempted to sketch their position on a piece of paper at a dull meeting the previous day and compared it to the actual photo afterward, he was basically correct. The three stars of Trisolaris, lying inconspicuously at the centre, looked like a single star in the standard view, but every time he magnified them, he found that their positions had changed. This chaotic cosmic dance so fascinated him that he forgot what he was looking for in the first place. The brush that had been observed 5 years ago had gradually faded away, and no second brush had appeared. The Trisolaran fleet left a visible wake only when it passed through interstellar dust clouds. Earth's astronomers had verified, through observations of the absorption of background starlight, that during the fleet's 4-century-long voyage through space, it would pass through 5 of them. People dubbed these snow patches, after the way that passers-by left tracks on snowy ground. If the Trisolaran fleet had maintained a constant acceleration over the past 5 years, it would pass the second snow patch today. Fitzroy arrived at the Hubble 2 Space Telescope Control Center early. Rangier laughed when he saw him. "General, why do you remind me of a child who wants another present so soon after Christmas?"
"Didn't you say that they would cross the snow patch today?"
"That's right, but the Trisolaran fleet has only travelled 0.22 light-years, so it's still 4 light-years away. Light reflected from its passage through the snow won't reach Earth for another 4 years."
"Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot about that," Fitzroy said with an embarrassed shake of his head. "I really wanted to see them again. This time, we'll be able to measure their speed and acceleration at the time of passage, and that's very important."
"I'm sorry, we're outside the light cone."
"What's that?"
"It's what physicists call the cone shape that light describes as it emanates along the time axis.
It's impossible for people outside the cone to comprehend the events taking place inside the cone. Think about it. Information about who knows how many major events in the universe is flying towards us right now at the speed of light. Some of it has been travelling for hundreds of millions of years, but we're still outside the light cones of those events. Fate lies within the light cone."
Rangier considered this, then gave him an appreciative nod.
"General, that's an excellent analogy. But sophons outside the light cone can see events on the inside."
"So the sophons have changed fate," Fitzroy said with feeling, and turned back to an image processing terminal. 5 years before, the young engineer Harris had started to cry at the sight of the brush, and afterward had suffered from depression so severe that he became practically useless at his job and was let go. No one knew where he had ended up. Fortunately, there weren't many people like him.